Hare Krishna. Another nice day here in Nivajadam, although I hear that it's going to be snowing over the weekend. And, well, that's good for me. I like to see snow, but it also means that it's going to be cold, so it may not be ideal for Sankirtan devotees. And I'm praying that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will give them all shelter and blessings and keep them warm. And thank you very much for the BBT sending out these hand warmers. I used them way back when, and they're really, really useful. In fact, there was a time when I had electric shoes with inlays that had warming inlays. They were also very, very useful. There are... I'm going to go through briefly a series of questions that we have. And the first one starts with Gornitai, who's asking what the plan of Navaraja Mahima is, what does it mean to us, as sadhakas, for the future, for ISKCON devotees. And it's not a new topic, but I'll take advantage of his request for me to advertise the book, which is going on well. And we're entering into, I won't say the last, very last phase, but we're entering into final phases. Myself writing, Keshav Bhari Maharaj is coming pretty soon, we're getting to the stage of joint, reading through edited work and so on. The main purpose of Navaraja Mahima is to glorify Radhisham and New Rajadam, give the Hungarian devotees a vision that there is a holy place here in Hungary, which is the extension of Vrindavan Dham in India, where they can't always go, but they can very easily come here, which is their place of pilgrimage, place to do parikrama, place to render service, to serve the Lord, to help build a holy place with beautiful temple, all types of memorials as we have now, parikramas marked in the same way that Krishna's abode in India, Bhoma Vrindavan, was developed, and as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually dedicated many of his main preachers to actually renovate that place, and then also to write about them. It's not meant to be some kind of exclusive place. The idea is that by Srila Prabhupada's mercy and the mercy of the Lord, such places are and should be manifest all throughout the ISKCON world, to give people all over the world the opportunity to visit holy places, get benefit, transcendental benefit. In addition to going to Ungde, it's not meant to exclude going to Bona Vrindavan, but it's meant to give everyone a facility to visit the extension of Bona Vrindavan, places that are very close to them at little or no expense, and easily accessible due to geographic proximity. So, anything more? And for the future of ISKCON devotees, and of course it glorifies Krishna's pastimes and the principle of the Dham. I think devotees will find a lot of extended, detailed pastimes that are often in parikrama books, written very, very briefly, sometimes only in as much as a line, at most a page. Here, for the most part, much more extensively described. He's asked another question, that because I'm busy writing, please advise us how to solve problems, which in the past have been solved by us. Well, my vision of my service is to switch from being a problem solver and to continue writing in the future, not as intensively as this, but continue with my preaching and leadership responsibilities in Hungary, and not be a nutcracker or a problem solver. There are nice systems set up just recently. Our counselor system is there for that, and to avert problems. The whole idea is to avert problems in devotees' personal lives in terms of their service. When they want to manage and organize their service, then there are department heads, devotees in the devotee community who take responsibility for managing service, and of course problems come up because we're in Kali Yuga and they're inevitable, but my request is that these problems become worked out on this level, more or less for the most part. I want to take more of a step back from that, because ultimately it needs to be worked out on other levels. I'm not going to be here forever, and what happens with problems when I'm not. So better that we learn how to actually work in such an efficient way that the number of problems that evolve decrease rather than increase, and that we take responsibility for that, especially devotees who have been in Krishna consciousness for 10, 20 years, Amar Agya Guru. They take responsibility for resolving these situations, and I'm trying to contribute that by giving the basic principles or guidelines for solving problems, which is being Krishna conscious. And that's what I try to do by my example and writings. Madhupati has a lengthy question, and basically it has to do with a health problem that we have, and we're really hoping that he gets better and overcomes that. So he's asking, should I pray to Krishna in order to overcome the health problem? And this isn't a question that I haven't answered before, but briefly, any type of reverses in the material world, which are inevitable, a pure devotee approaches them and says, my dear Lord, and this, I understand that this is a result of my past karma, this reverse situation that I'm suffering from. If it affects my service, and I could perform my service much better if I didn't have it, but if you want me to continue to execute my service with this handicap, whatever that handicap may be, then certainly I will do that. If you see it better that I become free from that in order to be able to do increased service, then I'll welcome that equally. But for me, whatever you arrange that is suitable and satisfactory, I offer my respectful obeisances unto your lotus feet. Hare Krishna. And Vrishabhanu Das from Gita Nagari, he says, we hear that if one offends a devotee, even though the devotee may forgive you, the dust of his lotus feet may not. Who or what is the dust of the lotus feet of devotees? Does this only apply to Mahabhagwats or pure devotees? Offenses apply to all Vaishnavas. We should be very careful not to commit offense to any devotee. And devotees have associates. Mahabhagwats have disciples. Other devotees have friends. So if we commit an offense to a Vaishnava, he may forgive us, but his associates, his disciples, his friends may not. And that means we may have to deal with that as well. So, and we want the well wishes of Vaishnavas. We don't want Vaishnavas thinking ill of us, saying anything that's not benefiting our own spiritual advancement. Moreover, we also know that Krishna doesn't necessarily forgive somebody, even if a devotee forgives. It will depend upon actually circumstances, the offense, the nature of the devotee, who has been offended, the attitude of the devotee who's asking for forgiveness, how real that is, and so on. Example that comes to mind, for instance, is Ramachandra Puri and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Ramachandra Puri didn't take offense at Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's criticism, but his devotees certainly did, and they didn't want to hear him, see him, talk to him. Here's an example of the dust of the lotus feet of the Lord. And the last question is from Pai Nididas. He says, Prabhupada painted a positive picture of Muslim religion, and Muhammad Bhavishya Purana Suhutra Maharaj elaborates differently. So how to harmonize the two? Basically, the harmonization takes place in between what our teachings are and our philosophy when analyzing the philosophical, theological content of other religions in comparison to Gaudiya Vaishnavism and preaching. When we preach, we may speak something different than what we in public, than what we say to devotees. Not because we say different things, but because we're invited to say different things. The time, the circumstance, the environment is different. We see that Srila Prabhupada did both. Srila Prabhupada wrote about the, especially in Christianity, about the relative merits of Christianity and Vaishnavism, and showed how, for instance, the most sort of general example that Prabhupada gave was about a dictionary. He said that other religions, they're like a sort of abridged dictionary that doesn't give much information about the meaning of words, but the Vedic literature and Vaishnava philosophy gives in-depth information. It's like the Oxford dictionary that very expansively gets into the meaning of words as well as their epistemology and so on. So this was Srila Prabhupada's approach, and he even in public sometimes explained it like that. When he compared, just to his devotee audience, the relative merits of different religions, he was even more critical. However, on the other hand, when he was invited to preach and speak and talk in the forum of other religious leaders, then Srila Prabhupada was more generous. He saw, he expanded instead on the commonality between religions. We're talking about God. God is a person. There's the emissaries of God or Guru, and there's a business to follow God's instructions. So, because that was what Srila Prabhupada was invited to do, therefore that is what he spoke on. So there's the difference, there's the oneness. Sometimes in educating our devotees, we elaborate on the difference, although we should also elaborate on the oneness. One of the offenses to the holy name is to criticize other scriptures. But the balance needs to be there. And devotees need to know how to keep this balance, when and to whom they elaborate on the difference between religions and when you elaborate upon the oneness. And in that way, we can both train our devotees nicely, and at the same time, we can preach, and preach without compromise, not particularly compromising. That's why often when we have sort of interfaith meetings, I recommend to the members of the interfaith meeting, why always talk about the oneness? Why don't we talk sometimes about the difference between religions and actually get some of these points out on the table? Yes, there's commonality between religions, but is there any difference? And can we live with that difference, and can we accept that? And Srila Prabhupada also gave the example. You go to school, there's elementary school, there's nursery school, there's university, there's PhD. We can adjust to that, that all education isn't the same. Can we accept the fact that necessarily all religions aren't on the same level? generally speaking, not everyone wants to be the best. We're, you know, our argument would be that, well, let's see the common merits and let's have such discussion. So if such a discussion was actually entertained, then we would be happy to participate in that and show why actually Gauri Vaishnavism is most superior. And that's it for today, and we'll continue tomorrow. Thank you all very much, and Hare Krishna.